Blog Talk Radio.
My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente, and we are getting ready to get things kicked off for week number one in college football. Really is scary. You know, like when you watch the horse races or the boxing matches, there's always those pre-matches and pre-races. So we're going to have one of those today. We'll talk about that. Standing by in our balanced green room is Adam Jividan, our super Browns fan, super Buckeyes fan, and all around college football co-pilot. Rick Riggin is down in Atlanta. Him and his wife went down there for a Braves game, so he is not going to be able to join us. But also joining us in the next half hour is Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest calling us from down in Daytona. Also, I would be remiss if we don't take some, and we are going to take some time dedicated to this, to what happened with Robin Miller passing. Yeah, you thought I was going to go all political, didn't you? But if you know anything about racing, you know who Robin Miller was. And you know he was the ultimate love-hate journalist. I've known him for a good number of years. Died of brain cancer this past week, so we're going to pay tribute to him as well this week in this show. Sorry, and then also Tony Donahue will be joining us for our NFL segment as Ed Kratz is with the Eagles and they're playing the Jets and just got a lot of stuff going on this weekend where he can't join us, but we're going to be talking about that plus our fantasy football breakdown as well. My name is Tom Marquis. Hail Presidente, if I could talk. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
National Guard is a reserve component of the United States Air Force and serves alongside active duty Air Force members in times of a national crisis. In addition, the Air Guard serves the state and local community in a wide range of capacities. The reason people join the Air Guard is as diverse as our members and includes such reasons as a deep desire to serve their country, money for college, travel, new job skills, and the pride that goes along with belonging to the greatest military organization in the world. I joined because I felt a calling to serve my country, but I didn't want to be far away from my family, so the Indiana Air National Guard was a perfect fit for me. With over 95 different career opportunities to choose from and 100% paid college tuition to any state-funded college, why not give us a call? Call 1-800-841-3103 or visit online at goang.com to find out more. Again, that's 1-800-841-3103. The Air National Guard, guarding America, defending freedom.
Morning face. You get is when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks! Run!
Linda!
No, it's me, Linda from HR!
It looks hungry! Save the children! Save them! Stay back! I've got mace!
Ow! They're one of my eyes!
We're moving!
It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA, love your home.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I've seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which, of course, in the Indonesian language... Oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it fresh and roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Hi, this is a good one. Kind of groove to.
And welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Mark Mattel, Presidente. 917-889-8516 is our digits, and helping us jump right into it today is Adam Jividen, Super Browns fan, Super Ohio State Buckeye fans, and our official college football co-pilot. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Tom. How are you, man?
Good. You had me worried there for a minute. I was like, what? What's going on?
I've been here. I don't know what was going on. If we had some technical difficulties, or I don't know what.
It takes time sometimes for all the connections to make together, but we're all good. We're all good. Well, technically, this is week one. We're start of college football technically starts today. But as Rick and I have
it's called week zero.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say that's what Rick and I were just bantering back and forth about, because technically it's not week one, it's week zero. And as I said in my opening dialogue there, it's kind of like when you go to the Kentucky Derby, you're there all day long, you see a few races, but it's not the Kentucky Derby. But today is some college football action on the ground. So let's get right into that. First of all, let's talk about we know. Again, talking about those many races that we watch before we get into the big stuff. So we know we're not going to see, when it comes to the top 25, when it comes to Ohio State, Notre Dame, whatever, this week, we're not really going to see a lot of what we would say fireworks and that sort of stuff. But as we take a look at, well, week zero and week one going into college football, give us your thoughts overall, sir.
You know, I'm really excited for this football season. I think last year was obviously with the COVID year, was the strangest year we've ever had. A lot of teams didn't really get much, if any, of an off season, or if they got an off season, players were, you know, absent for large chunks of practices. We heard a lot of coaches were talking about how it was the worst year for development that they've ever had, because they just weren't able to get in that kind of one-on-one coaching time that makes a big difference, especially with young players in college football that every team relies on to step up. So, I mean, I'm super excited for games today. I know it's not college football, but I'm really excited to watch Chelsea and Liverpool today at 12:30. It's good to have, like, the fall where we got a lot of sports back on, not those kind of summer days where you got maybe some crappy baseball games, and that's it. So, I'm pumped.
Super pumped. Well, let's go ahead and let's just talk about the games of the day, and then we'll go ahead and get into some of the other conversation. We got two big 10 teams going at it today at 1:20, Nebraska and Illinois. Nebraska's at Illinois. You always got to think that when you look at Nebraska that – they're going to be a more stronger, more dominant team, especially when it comes to Illinois. But when we look at what Nebraska's put before us and especially last season, and just overall, I think over the last couple seasons, of course, yes, we can attribute COVID to a lot of this, so we've always got that hanging over our head, but it is what it is. I'm curious to see how this plays out today. It's going to be one of two things. It's going to be a snooze test, or it's going to be, you know, a really good action-filled game. I mean, that's logical. It's going to go one way or the other, I guess. But what are your thoughts on Nebraska and Illinois?
Yeah, you know, this is a game that Scott Frost needs real, real bad. Scott Frost, you know, came to Nebraska coming off of those UCF teams that he put together that were, I mean, dominant, and he's come back to Nebraska, his alma mater, and with a lot of fanfare. And so far, it's just been not even average. It's just been bad. And so he needs this game desperately. So I think I look for Nebraska to really try to come out and set the tone. If they can, you know, Illinois similarly has Brett Bielema came back after his exile to the SEC, where he learned that he's not actually a good coach, or at least he doesn't know how to cheat as well as some of those SEC schools did before the NIL came in. But regardless, you know, he's back. After massive success at Wisconsin before he went to Arkansas. So this is going to be – he's looking to try to establish, you know, kind of his new regime. Scott Frost desperately needs a win to get their season started off right. So it's one of those games that – and again, you're going to have that week one sloppiness, but I think this is actually a game that will play better than it looks on paper.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of what my thought is. I'm hoping that it's not going to be a snooze fest. It is going to be one of those things. And you're right, Scott Frost does need this. In fact, he's was on the hot seat last year, so we'll see what happens. Move on over to Connecticut and Fresno State. There again, you think you're looking at Connecticut and Fresno State, not a lot to look at because this isn't basketball. Now, if this was basketball, we'd be having a completely different conversation. But we look at Connecticut, you know, heading out to California. That's always a role to play. Certainly California has a lot more stricter roles as far rules going on now as far as the COVID and fans in attendance. I don't know how much that's going to come into play, but you look at this game kind of being a game that Fresno could get their season kicked off with a win.
Yeah, you know, Connecticut hasn't been good since those, like, Dan Orlovsky days at quarterback, right? But I think the biggest thing that what we're going to – what I'm
which
interested
was the,
in –
which was a cult also, by the way.
Right. But I think the thing that I'm really interested to see with these schools that are not a part of the Power Five is how did they start maneuvering themselves to establishing good programs. You know, both of these teams, Fresno and UConn, are teams that will occasionally, like, have those uprisings, those year or two of solid seasons. I think of UConn. Remember they had ex-Colt Donald Brown, and they won their conference a couple times. They did it with Orlovsky. But that's the thing is that these smaller teams that are now kind of on the fringe of going, okay, what's left for us? If they can start in building some momentum, especially with the new NIL, in place, I think it could, like, level the playing field, and you could maybe have some local guys stay home. So these schools are going to look in this new era of college football to try to establish, like, some signature out-of-conference wins. And I think both of those teams are going to be looking for exactly that today.
Well, this is the game I would typically go to Rick to, you know, get his feathers all in a ruffle. Hawaii and UCLA. What are your thoughts, sir?
I mean, UCLA, they gotta get some wins. I mean, period. Like, you know, they've had Chip Kelly come in after his run in the NFL, and he's just been bad. But, I mean, UCLA and the Pac-10, they need to string together wins, period. And this is where – What I'm curious to see with the entire Pac-10 is, can they as a conference string wins together against other conferences? You know, there's the biggest Pac-10, the biggest two Pac-10 games of the year are in week two, when Ohio State plays Oregon and Washington goes to I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't have it up.
Week two as well. But I mean, that's the thing is if the Pac-10, like if Ohio State beats Oregon, which non-Homer speaking, I expect to happen, and Washington loses, could this be one of those things where the Pac-10 is eliminated essentially from college football playoff contention 2 weeks into the season? That's what the Pac-10 has to avoid. And so for the conference, UCLA's got to show up and win, and then try to establish some momentum for their own program because they've had none of it for the last couple years.
Oh, absolutely. I thought you were going on to say something else, so I apologize. Well, let's talk a little bit about your Ohio State football Buckeyes. Obviously, going down to the Gopher Land there, don't anticipate anything major happening here, but it's always a big game, and you have a Big Ten game involving Ohio State, and it's on in prime time. So all eyes are going to be on Ohio State in Minnesota. So from the Ohio State perspective, what are they going to do when they go gopher hunting later next week?
Yeah, so this game is on Thursday, which is weird. but, you know, I expect if I would honestly be a lot more concerned about this game if it wasn't week one. Since it's week one, there is going to be no question as to if the guys are going to be dialed in. They will be locked, loaded, and as you said, ready to go gopher hunting. I think, you know, they've got a returning quarterback in Tanner Morgan up in Minnesota who last year was not good. 2 years ago was really solid. But they also had some really solid receivers 2 years ago with Rashad Bateman, who didn't play last year. He was a COVID sit out, and Tyler Johnson. And what can Tanner Morgan put together in his last season is kind of a big question mark. Ohio State's secondary last year was freaking atrocious. Can the Ohio State secondary start to put it together? Can linebacker play really good? If you talk to Ohio State coaches or you hear from Ohio State coaches, they are very, very excited about the defensive line. But how is the defense going to gel off of – for us, it was a really tough year last year with the COVID start-stop, and we were routinely missing players from due to COVID last year, or we had several games get canceled, including that game against Michigan State, and when that team up north pansied out for the season because we knew we were going to lay 70 on them. So, you know, I think this is a game where Ohio State's going to try to come in and set the tone. I'm looking at I'm thinking essentially a score of like 45-17. I think they'll get a couple plays in early. And the big thing is the big question mark for Ohio State's going to be how does new quarterback starter C.J. Stroud handle the pressure? Everything that we've seen in practice, everything we've heard is that this kid is ready to go, and you're going to see some Justin Fields type ability from him. And the thing is that if he can't handle it, they've got – it's the most loaded quarterback room I've ever seen. There are 3 5-star quarterbacks in the same quarterback room. It's nuts between C.J. Stroud, Jack McCord, and then Quinn Ewers. So I think they'll be – ready to go. We're hearing incredible things from the offensive line following spring practice. And then it's just the running backs are going to be – they're deep, but nobody has distanced himself yet. Look for Mayan Williams and Travion Henderson. Mayan Williams is a sophomore. Travion Henderson's a true freshman. They're going to get ultimately, I think, by the midseason, the lion's share of the carries. And then Master Teague, a senior, will also get his fair share of carries as well. It's kind of how that load is going to be split up. But, yeah, I think Ohio State's going to come out. Ryan Day is going to try to set a tone that they can carry forward into that massive matchup in week two against Oregon.
Well, one face that I know a lot of people are going to be looking to and expecting a lot of, and that's Chris Olave, obviously wide receiver there at Ohio State. And certainly a lot of people right now are saying, hey, he's going to be on that list. to be called in April. We're going to go through some of that top hidden list that Adam Scheffner and McShay put out later here in a few minutes. They put out on Twitter. We'll just kind of go through their names to get their thoughts. Obviously, Chris Olave was on that list. But so what are your thoughts about him? He's got a lot to live up to, or do you think he's just comfortable in this role, as he could very well possibly be his introduction to the NFL, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I mean, Olave was on the team last year. Two years ago against Michigan, he caught two touchdown passes and recovered a blocked punt for a touchdown in that game 2 years ago up in Ann Arbor. And, you know, last year had a really solid season, missed the Big Ten championship game, sat out because of COVID, but was really, I mean, really solid throughout the year. The thing about Ohio State is their receiver room is bananas. There was a discussion this week up in Chicago asking, is the Bears receiver room worse than the receiver room that he left in Columbus? Because they're looking at the receiver room in Columbus with potentially five over the next few years first-round wide receivers between Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jackson Smith-Najigba, Marvin Harrison Jr., and then either Julian Fleming or Emeka Egbuka. It's the deepest receiver room I've ever seen, and a lot of that has to do with Brian Hartline recruiting his absolute tail off, that he's gotten the number one receiver in the country the last 3 years, and the next number one receiver, Caleb Burton from Oklahoma, is coming this next season. So it's just, the room is deep, and they all are very different players. Olave is incredibly sure-handed and super fast up the sideline. He plays that traditional, outside receiver position. And then Garrett Wilson, you could put him in the slot. You could put him on the outside. You can put him, like double stack to either side. If you want to stack up like the strong side or the weak side, you can put him really anywhere. And then Jackson Smith-Najigba, as a true sophomore, is just he's a man. He's all of 6'4". Like 215 and just strong. He's that prototypical big receiver. And that's the thing is that ultimately the question for all of the Ohio State receivers is going to be, how do they dispense the ball? Because we also have the highest rated tight end coming into this season. And so it's there's only one ball. There's only so many carries. And so will we be able to get Jeremy Ruckert the ball, the tight end? Will be able to handle all the carries. They're going to have a lot of opportunities. But, yeah, I expect Chris Olave easily to be called in that first round. I think it could be similar to what we saw from Alabama a couple years ago, where two Alabama receivers went in the top 12 with Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs. So, yeah, absolutely. Olave is a monster. He's Mr. Smooth.
So as we know, that one of the things we always talk about as we get close to the committee and what they're talking about in playoffs, look forward, and we know we're going to have this conversation, strength of schedule. And we know, okay, when we look at the SEC, the Big Ten, or what have you. So I wonder how much of an impact these non-conference schedules or records will play, and as far as the toughest or the weakest schedule when it comes to the committee, and how it plays out. And when you look at, we're talking about Nebraska again, they certainly would think they have one of the toughest schedules with Oklahoma and Buffalo and Fordham being part of that opponent's thing. But Rutgers seems to have a very easy schedule as far as non-conference schedules we're talking about, Temple at Syracuse and Delaware. So as you look at these non-conference options could come into play, especially if they have, now that we have an expansion of the playoff teams, what is the overall thought on these non-conference impact on the committee's thoughts on who's going to the playoffs and who is not?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes a massive, it plays a massive difference. And it's kind of smart what Rutgers is doing, right? You've got Greg Schiano that's back at Rutgers that's trying to establish an identity for that team. So if they can go undefeated in non-conference, maybe pick up a win over like a Maryland or another like lower tier Big Ten team early, maybe you can start to sniff that top 25 a little bit. Now, is it going to be one of those top 25 that you look at the end of the season and be like, yeah, that wasn't a top 25 team? Probably. But even just making that appearance helps their recruiting. And so I think it's going to make a big difference, especially as we get closer to the potential college football playoff expansion. You know, there was talks it was going to go to 12 teams, and now it's kind of like several of the conference commissioners are like, hey, let's slow this train down a little bit. I think it's going to make a big deal, especially this year. This year, there's, as I mentioned, you know, there's the big major non-conference game that Ohio State has with Oregon. There's also Georgia going or Georgia is playing Clemson. I believe that's a neutral site game. If Clemson loses that game, like with the weakness of the rest of the ACC, that could be it. Like that could be their shot. I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I think some combination of the two of the four big teams that everybody's kind of assuming are going to go to the college football playoff. My bold prediction this year was that two of them won't, whether it's Ohio State, Oklahoma, Alabama, or Clemson. And so you look at that, again, with Oregon, if Oregon loses to Ohio State, especially if Ohio State wins handily in a game in Columbus at noon, which for them would be 9 a.m. on the West Coast, like if Ohio State wins handily, how does that affect the rest of the Pac-10s?
What about this scenario? What if Syracuse comes to Ohio and beats Ohio? What does that do for Ohio? And what if Syracuse beats Liberty? That's an easy schedule there. But at the same time, if they come in and beat Ohio, and also beat a team like Liberty, that's got to carry some weight, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole point. Is I think these conferences are really going to be bandying for a conference schedule that will allow them to have the best shot for the CFP. Now, that's where you go, okay, if Syracuse goes undefeated, how does that help Syracuse? And you may say, well, Syracuse isn't going to make the playoff. We know that. But Syracuse going undefeated in non-conference play shows the power of the ACC, which in turn helps make Clemson's case a little stronger if, for example, they were to lose to Clemson. And that's where these are the questions that the College Football Playoff Committee is answering or should be asking on a weekly basis, that a lot of the like casual fan goes, okay, yeah, but what about this team? This team beat that team, so why are they, you know, or this team beat, has this strength of schedule. You don't just look at their overall record. You look at who those teams beat. Because to your point, a Rutgers team that has beaten, you know, some pretty lame, you know, lamer college football teams is a pretty weak schedule. If you take that team and you beat, for example, maybe not a name program, but somebody that's played, we'll say like a Nebraska or a Kansas State, those are the kind of teams that help buoy your strength of schedule needed for the college football playoff. Because I feel like this is going to be a more wide open year than we've ever had in recent memory for the CFP.
We've been talking with Adam Jividen, our college football co-pilot. We got just a minute or so left here. So let's just kind of break down Todd McShay's top prospects for the 2021 draft and put it out there on Twitter. And I'm just going to go through there's the top five, and you can just go ahead and give me your thoughts, because we're about out of time here. I lost my thing. Well, we'll just have to go back down the list. Kamir Elm with Florida. What are your thoughts?
He's one that I'm going to be honest. I haven't been able to see a ton of his tape. I know that he missed chunks of season last year. He's got a lot of potential. I want to see Florida's team take a big step forward under Dan Mullen. These preseason prognostications are really oftentimes just based off of potential. And I think Florida has one of the most potential laden teams if they can put it all together.
Okay, you're absolutely right there. Let's Well, so we were talking about Liberty a while ago, and we certainly know Liberty. Well, you know Liberty very well.
I know Liberty very well.
We would talk a lot about them during the basketball part, but we look at a quarterback who's in the top 10, Malik Willis, with Liberty. We'll make that the final guy we talk about today, but he's on the top 10 list for the 22 draft to be in the 22 NFL draft. So Malik Willis, quarterback for Liberty.
Yeah, dude, Malik Willis is no joke. Last year, he threw for like I gotta check his stats. I had going into this call. He had like 40 touchdowns accounted for last year. It was ridiculous. He's really good, like really good. And a lot of people go like, yeah, but Liberty. And for those of us, you know, for people that don't know, Hugh Freeze, the former coach at Ole Miss, is the head coach now at Liberty, and he's really turning it into a really solid program. But Malik Willis is gonna put up big time numbers. The guy that you need to be thinking about when you're talking comparison from a Malik Willis perspective, he looks so similar to I think the best comp that I've seen or that I've kind of felt was Donovan McNabb at Syracuse. He can run the ball. He can be dynamic with the ball. But he is a solid, solid pocket passer. And I know I'm going back a while, but McNabb in his prime was an absolute beast and did so similarly at a small school in Syracuse. Malik's ridiculous, and I'm super excited to watch as many Liberty games as I can this year and get to, you know, just get hyped for my alma mater.
Absolutely. Looking forward to watching him this season. Adam Jividen, we appreciate you joining us, sir. And we'll have you on throughout the year. You're always welcome here. And let's go from zero to one in a matter of days. How about that?
Sounds good, man. I'll talk to you soon, Tom.
Everybody, we'll see you. Adam Jividen, our part of our college football team. Rick is down in Atlanta. Enjoying some R&R down there with the Braves game. But I'm sure we'll have him on next week. As you know, he's like, it's just week zero. My name's Tom Marcos, El Presidente. Stick around. We're going to talk about some racing with Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest down in Daytona. And we have a very special tribute to Robin Miller coming up right after this.
I'm at a party I don't wanna be at, and I don't ever wear a suit and tie. Wondering if I can sneak out the back. Nobody's even looking me in my eye. Can you take my hand, finish my drink, say shall we dance? Hell yeah. You know I love you, did I ever tell you? You make it better like that. Don't think I fit in at this party. Everyone's got so much to say. Yeah. I always feel like I'm
The Air National Guard is a reserve component of the United States Air Force and serves alongside active duty Air Force members in times of a national crisis. In addition, the Air Guard serves the state and local community in a wide range of capacities. The reason people join the Air Guard is as diverse as our members and includes such reasons as a deep desire to serve their country, money for college, travel, new job skills, and the pride that goes along with belonging to the greatest military organization in the world. I joined because I felt a calling to serve my country, but I didn't want to be far away from my family, so the Indiana Air National Guard was a perfect fit for me. With over 95 different career opportunities to choose from and 100% paid college tuition to any state-funded college, why not give us a call? Call 1-800-841-3103 or visit online at goang.com to find out more. Again, that's 1-800-841-3103. The Air National Guard, guarding America, defending freedom.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
Morning face. You get is when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks. Run!
No, it's me, Linda, from HR.
It looks hungry. Save the children. Save them. Stay back. I've got mace.
Ow, they're one of my eyes.
We're moving.
It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA, love your home.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle Coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so, I don't know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which, of course, in the Indonesian language... Oh, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes, but it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wanting.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it fresh and roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
You know what really makes me angry? When I start to do a stand-up for Speed and they start playing loud music and I got to talk even louder than I am now.
It isn't fair to lump me in with Hinton because he's a college-educated man with a family and I am a flunk out of Ball State who can't hold a job who does hate a lot of things.
Dale Jr. would have done that. I'm all for him. I've never met the guy, but I like Dale Jr. I really do.
Yeah, right.
I used to.
Dale Jr. is, to me, and is just number one. He does. He tries not to hit anybody, and y'all start in on him every time, and I am sick of it.
He tried so hard to miss Carl yesterday.
Yeah, that car was so far sideways when he hit him. Come on, lady.
We got
the Jack Daniels down and call back later.
I think I entirely deserve that for saying that Kurt Busch stapled his ears back together early in the season, and now it's 1-1, and we have to have a tiebreaker. And the owners of Champ Car finally get it through their heads. We've got to have the same people in the cars every year so people might start paying attention to us. It's called professional auto racing. And guess what? As long as they keep treating this like a Monopoly game, nobody's going to respect them.
She's 34 years old, allegedly. I haven't seen her birth certificate. I think she's older. She is, by definition of all the people that race with her in Grand Am Racing, talented, very talentedly. She's challenged to be talented at any level, at any speed.
You know Gossage pretty well, and I mean, his ego's as big as Texas. We know that, and this would be a chance for him to come in and save the Indy Racing League, find him a title sponsor. They could probably build a statue next to Ray Haroon out in front of the Speedway, and he'd be pretty happy. But
just stop with it.
But this just goes to show you how screwed up Champ Car Racing is and how unserious these guys are about beating Newman Haas. You don't come up with a team driver for Paul Tracy until a week before the season. You don't test him or anything in a brand-new car. How are you going to beat Newman Haas? You're not. This is the only sport in the world where you start your career at the Indianapolis 500. If you're a baseball player, you go through the AAA or single A or W. You start at single A and you go all the way to triple A. If you're good enough, you make it to the majors. No, not in racing. You get a sponsor, you get a car, and you go take your rookie test, and you run the Indy 500. Oh, my, this is fun.
I've been on Mark Miles's butt, not nearly enough. I'm gonna start getting meaner here because he doesn't listen to anybody who knows anything about racing.
That big yacht back there belongs to Tony George, and he said if I can swim to it, he's gonna feed me.
Robin Miller, he will be greatly missed. And what a great storyteller he was. You know, I had the awesome opportunity of getting to know Robin over the years, and certainly there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but just his overall history and impact in racing journalism overall. And he was a tell it like it. Well, like he saw it anyway, whether or not it really was what it was, but he certainly saw it, told you the way he saw it, and the way it was through his eyes, and him being such a remarkable storyteller, just made that even better. And, you know, remember that they had made him the Man of the Year out at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's been a couple of years ago, but they had A.J. Foyt, and they had Al Unser, and they had Johnny Rutherford, and they had all the big names that were still alive. Uncle Al was still alive at that point, and he was there. And, you know, all the big names came out to pay tribute to him. And, you know, just the stories about when he worked with IndyCar. You know, there was a time he got in a fist fight with A.J. Foyt. Those kind of things you don't see anymore, but that did happen. And so the stories that we hear from Robin, just take some time to go back and look at his stories, read his stories. And you know, to quote him, as he said, he flunked out of Ball State. But, he did. He flunked out of Ball State after just two quarters. Got a job stooging for Jim Husteby in the 1968 Indianapolis 500 when Hertz was the last roadster to ever make the race. He got hired at the Indianapolis Star a month later. Well, imagine this, if you know Robin, got fired. He also talked his way into the sports department, and then he began covering IndyCar racing, got fired because he was anti-Tony George. And we know the story about Tony George and the IndyCar and the split with IndyCar and Card. We could go down that path, but basically, yeah, because he was anti-Tony George, gets fired. He just, as we joke around about drivers, and he alluded to in that little bit that we played, you know, you're a driver, you show up, you get a sponsor. They call that I've arrived, helmet in bag, ready to go. He would just, here I am, resume in bag. Here's my article. But ESPN did hire him to write and do the RPM Tonight. Then he went on to Speed, and we remember him from Speed, and then on the Wind Tunnel and Speed Report. And then he also started in his final days was with Racer.com, NBC Sports, and IndyCar Telecast. Robin Miller, you'll be greatly missed. I'm sure he's telling great stories in heaven right now. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. 917-889-8516, third digits. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back here to regroup. Hopefully, we're going to be joined by Steve Wilson. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
I got a feeling deep within my soul, and right now I really need to let you know that each time I've fallen down inside that hole, you came and showed me there's a way to go. So we can love deeper, fly higher, see clearer, burn brighter, feel more than we ever did before.
The Air National Guard is a reserve component of the United States Air Force and serves alongside active duty Air Force members in times of a national crisis. In addition, the Air Guard serves the state and local community in a wide range of capacities. The reason people join the Air Guard is as diverse as our members and includes such reasons as a deep desire to serve their country, money for college, travel, new job skills, and the pride that goes along with belonging to the greatest military organization in the world. I joined because I felt a calling to serve my country, but I didn't want to be far away from my family, so the Indiana Air National Guard was a perfect fit for me. With over 95 different career opportunities to choose from and 100% paid college tuition to any state-funded college, why not give us a call? Call 1-800-841-3103 or visit online at goang.com to find out more. Again, that's 1-800-841-3103. The Air National Guard, guarding America, defending freedom.
All right, and welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis. What an awesome tribute that was that we just played to Robin Miller. Joining us now, I believe, is Steve Wilson from Speedway Digest, editor-in-chief of Speedway Digest, our official NASCAR contributor down in Daytona. Steve, are you with us?
Yes.
Good, good. First of all, how's the weather down there in Daytona today?
Well, at least it's shaping up to be a little bit better than yesterday.
I was going to say, it was kind of nasty last night, wasn't it? Right, before we get into that talk, yeah. Obviously we're going to have to finish the Xfinity race today. We had some rain issues, but before we get into all that, I'd like to have you just take some time to reflect on Robin Miller. Maybe you didn't know him, personally, but I had an opportunity to get to know him over the years. And certainly considered him a friend, great storyteller. What are your thoughts about the passing of Robin Miller, tragically to brain cancer?
Yeah, he's not somebody that I knew personally, just of some of his work and what he had done for working for Speed Channel and NBC and others over the years. And he always brought a no nonsense approach to all of this, and it was just something that he was able to make a lot of friends in the sport, and he was able to bring those stories to the people over all these over these years. And anytime somebody dies of cancer like that, it really is sad.
Yeah, it is, and that's one of the things that I felt like his talent was. His ability to tell a story, whether or not you listen to him on a podcast or you listen to him on a radio broadcast or listen or read any of his articles in any of his normal publications or watched him on NBC Sports, wherever you happen to catch Robin Miller, he had the ability to tell a story. As I said before you joined, he had the ability to tell you exactly the way it is. Now, whether or not it's the right way to say it, or that maybe he's looking at things through his eyes, as we remember, he got fired from the Indianapolis Star because he was anti-Tony George, and I know you're very familiar with Tony George and with the split between IndyCar and CART and all of that. He was very critical of them, but he was just a magnificent guy, and like I said a few years ago, they gave him the Man of the Year out in Indianapolis, and all the legends came out, and they just told stories about one time him getting in a fist fight with A.J. Foyt, which isn't hard to believe in that time and era, but certainly he was part of covering racing and doing the racing pit crew in the 1968 Indianapolis 500, which was the year I was born, to put that into context. But just, over the years, just had an opportunity to get to know him at the media center and just in different functions. He always, a lot of times, ate lunch at the working man's lunch here in Indianapolis. It's been around for years. They don't even take credit. They still only take cash. Have the best cheeseburgers and root beer around. But he would just sit around and tell stories, and he was the ultimate storyteller. And I think you can't expect any type of journalist to do any better of a job. Whether or not now can I say that he was disagreed with lots of times? Yeah, and he was very plain spoken. So you did, if you were a driver or whatever, you just had to wear your feelings, not wear your feelings on your sleeve. And it was just really awesome to see both NASCAR, IndyCar, and across the racing community of driving drivers, owners, and professionals pay tribute to Robin Miller. And I'm certain that they'll have him honored out there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in some way or another. All right, let's get back on track. No pun intended. The Xfinity race gets rained out last night. Where do they pick up at? When does it start? How many laps is left to finish this race?
They're going to pick back up at 12:30 on NBCSN. 19 laps have been completed at this time. And right now you've got up front with A.J. Allmendinger and Noah Gregson, who's been doing battle for the last several laps after the exit of Brandon Jones. So it's been pretty dicey up front between those guys, fighting for that lead. And, you know, Brandon Jones, unfortunately, he got a window tear off, stuck on the grill of the car, with a few laps into the race, and that brought him into pit road during the competition crash on lap 15. Unfortunately, they found out that the motor had already gone south in that car, and he's been pushed to a garage and will no longer resume. He's done for the event with an expired motor.
Well, so let me ask you, I guess when they go into the red flag rain conditions, so when they come back out today to get ready to go today, are they still under red flag conditions until that's changed? Is there, or can they immediately, like any other day, like any other race, begin to start working and preparing for the race today?
No, it'll still be under red flag condition. NASCAR typically, when they do these things overnight, these prolonged red flags like this, NASCAR will typically allow the teams to do some minor work, such as make sure that the batteries in the cars are charged, that the oils and fluids in the cars are still ready to go, prime the systems, sometimes let them run for a few minutes and warm the cars up, check their things like radios and things like that, just to make sure that the cars are ready to race after all these hours of sitting around. But aside from that, there'll be no mechanical work or anything until they lift the red flag conditions.
Well, we're used to seeing Kurt Busch in the Monster Energy Fighter suit, but he's going to be changing clothes for a little bit in 2022 as he will move to the 23XI Racing to Drive, the team's second car in 2022. Of course, Monster Energy will still remain Busch's primary sponsor. The car will be number 45. Thoughts on Kurt Busch signing with 23XI, XL, whatever that is, a Roman numeral racing for 2022.
Well, I think Kurt, with the purchase of Chip Ganassi Racing, that organization will be absorbed by another team starting next year, and the other driver for that team is going on over to that absorbed team. He kind of left Kurt Busch out there in limbo for a little bit, and for him to go over there. Kurt Busch has been a driver that we've seen him go to Stuart Haas Racing. We've seen him come over to Chip Ganassi Racing. And he's been a driver in the past that you take a look at, and just a lot of teams just want to have him around because he's a veteran, and if you've looked at it in the past, a lot of times he's been paired up with these rookie drivers or drivers that had not been around for very long. And not only that, but his skills inside the car and setups in these cars and just things that may have been overlooked by a driver that doesn't have much experience. He's able to come in and tell the teams what they're doing wrong and improve and get better. And that's been something that Kurt Busch has been good at over these last couple of years. and really just coming in and trying helping these teams get better.
Well, it's the Coke Zero Sugar 400 at Daytona. Obviously, always great to see a race at Daytona. Certainly one of the best racetracks around in the circuit. Very legendary. We know Daytona, but this is the Coke Zero Sugar 400. It's certainly been one of the marquee races for the NASCAR Cup Series schedule. What are some of the storylines we're looking at? I mean, we certainly are looking at, you know, Austin Dillon obviously has done well here before. We look at Denny Hamlin. So what are some of your thoughts in the drivers we're looking at today?
Yeah, both Austin Dillon, Denny Hamlin, and Brad Keselowski, you know, these are seasoned veterans that are honed the craft in a lot of these, what we consider speedway, super speedway racing, these old restrictor plates type racing. You know, Denny Hamlin has gone all season long. He's atop of the leaderboard in the point series, but he hasn't won yet. You know, and after tonight, though, they're going to cut off and they're going to be the drivers that are going to go and fight for the championship through the remainder of 2021. And for Denny Hamlin, without a win, he's going to get kicked down a little bit in these standings. And Denny needs to come in. He needs to win. He needs to get some points to help preserve some of that playoff longevity that is going to be coming over the next 10 or so weeks. And, you know, you're just – you know, it's we came to Daytona in February, and you know, that race was taken by Michael McDowell. And, you know, Denny Hamlin has had you know with the perennial favorite coming in, these things just about every time we come down here. But then, you know, we thought that'd be okay. Denny Hamlin will win a race. He'll get in. He'll do what he needs to do. And I mean, he's been consistent. And he's been able to go out there with virtually no mechanical and no other issues throughout the season, which has kept him atop the leaderboard, even though drivers like Carl Larson has won multiple times. But, you know, we're coming down to it, and, you know, without some of those wins, you know, you just don't have the points, and you're gonna be stuck down there with some of the other guys below the Kyle Larsons and the other drivers that have won multiple times this year, and you're gonna have to be fighting and scraping for every point. You only have 3 weeks to do it.
So we look at the we got just a little bit of time here, just a couple minutes left here. We look at the playoff picture as it stands now, as we look at it coming in today. Kyle Larson, Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, Alex Bowman, William Byron, Denny Hamilton, Joey Logano, Brad Keselowski, Kurt Busch, Christopher Bell, Michael McDowell, Eric Almirola, Tyler Reddick, and, well, hanging out on there. For the moment, anyway, is Kevin Harvick. As we look at the playoff picture, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, again, it's just Kevin Harvick is another one too that we've seen just a couple of seasons ago that him and Stuart Haas Racing was at the top of their game and they were putting up wins, and Eric Almirola has been the only one so far this year that has been able to come through for that Stuart Haas Racing organization. So, you know, we'll have to continue to watch Kevin Harvick, because in the past, sometimes it, you know, just because he wasn't necessarily getting the wins, he was able to come through when it matters most. And we've seen that time and time again out of him. For others such as Chase Elliott, I think he's coming into this thing to defend that championship this year, and he so far played very well into making sure that he's in a very good position to contend for that 2021 Cup Series championship.
Who's going to win today? And what's that going to mean to their playoff picture? Do we think anybody that is already above that line is going to win today, or is somebody going to come in and create chaos for the playoff picture for those that are on the bubble, if you will?
Well, this is a donut, and a lot of these things are unknown. It's sometimes the great or equalizer, and that's why, you know, Michael McDowell won the Daytona 500. He was definitely a guy that threw a monkey wrench into the whole season as far as his ability to come through, rated the first race of the season and be the first one over some of the better favorites and more funded and better organized and engineered teams. And, you know, you come to Daytona and you just don't know. But, again, you still have to watch out for those guys that have become good speedway, super speedway racers over the years. And Denny Hamlin and Brad Keselowski and others have really honed, again, like I said earlier, honed a craft on doing this. And they'll go out there tonight and do what they do best and play that chess match to their abilities.
Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest, we appreciate you joining us today from Daytona. I hope you get the race in today, and I hope it clears up for a good race tonight.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Steve Wilson, you can find him at SpeedwayDigest.com and at Speedway Digest. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Stick around. It's about to get good. We'll get into our NFL talk. We're going to talk with Tony Donahue from the Tony D podcast, who's going to be joining us. And Ed Kratz is not going to be able to join us today as he is working with the Eagles. He's in New York City, and he's got a lot going on, and he's going to spend the day in Manhattan with his wife. So a lot going on with him. But Tony Donahue will take the lead for the NFL segment with the Tony D from the Tony D podcast when we get back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what...
Morning face. You get it when you don't sleep well. This is what happened to Linda.
Morning, guys.
Good morning. Ah, what is that thing?
It's me, Linda.
Oh, my God, it talks! Run!
No, it's me, Linda, from HR.
It looks hungry! Save the children! Save them! Stay back! I've got mace!
It's called beauty sleep for a reason. And there's never been a better time to get some.
Get 20% off IKEA Sultan mattresses. IKEA, love your home.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I've seen on the board, do you guys have Black Rifle Coffee here?
No, I'm sorry. We only carry good small batch coffee here.
Well, it is great small batch coffee.
Well, that really can't be unless it's fresh roasted, so I don't, you know.
Well, it is fresh roasted.
I don't think you know what that means. You know what this is? This is Masa Lekwa Pike, which of course, in the Indonesian language, let me finish. In the Indonesian language, it's weasel coffee.
You just made that up.
No, it's been passed through their digestive tract.
That's disgusting.
And then it's nature's wet processing.
Yeah, but is it good?
I mean, it's all right. Are they investor philanthropists? Do they support good causes?
Yeah, tons of causes. Veterans causes and first responder causes. But it doesn't matter because they make good coffee. So that's what I'm wondering.
Do you have any?
You know what? Actually, I'm just going to order it. They make it fresh and roasted.
Okay. Right.
Black Rifle Coffee.
It's good.
All right, and welcome back to The Balance. Thank you, Adam Jividen, for kicking off some college football talk as we go into week zero, if you will, and as we get ready for week one coming up next week. But certainly two Big Ten teams in action, Nebraska and Illinois. Certainly Scott Frost needs a win to kick the season off with the win. We talked about that. And Steve Wilson also joined us from Speedway Digest, editor-in-chief and our official NASCAR contributor. Took some time to pay tribute to Robin Miller. Certainly the passing of him was very, very tragic and very well known in the journalism community, especially within the IndyCar community, and he'll be missed very much so. And then talking about down in Daytona where Steve called us from. They had some rain last night, didn't get the Xfinity race in, but they're going to try to finish that up starting around 12:30, starting at lap 19 and finish that race up. And then, of course, you've got the Coke Zero Sugar 400 tonight out in Daytona. But joining us now from a secret bunker location that we do not know, Tony Donahue from the Tony D Podcast. Tony, how are you, sir?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. You know what? I want to get into our football talk. I do. But I also know your connection to racing and your connection to Robin Miller. I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about your memories of Robin Miller.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he was a guy that, and I've said it all week, you know, when he wrote something or he talked, you know, people listen. You know, there's so many writers and bloggers, everybody, you know, that you can get information from. I mean, there's hundreds, you know, you could pick one team and find 30 to 40, 50 blogs. But when it came to auto racing or it came to an opinion, you know, whenever Robin spoke or when he wrote, you listened and you read. And it was just fitting that, you know, when drivers have passed away or, you know, Bobby Unser a few months ago or Bob Jenkins, it was Robin Miller's voice that, you know, NBC Sports always used to kind of talk over the emotions and the feelings of seeing those drivers pass away. And, you know, he was just somebody that everybody, I think, looked at as like your supportive uncle, your fun uncle that, you know,
exactly.
Just always told you how it was and always gave his opinion, whether it, you know, was going to piss you off or not. So very, very sad to see him go.
Absolutely. I mean, we've certainly reflected those very same thoughts in the last segment in talking about him. He was the ultimate storyteller. And I like your definition of the uncle, because he is. He will tell you like it is. And I, as I said a while ago, he told the story how he saw it. And that was the way it was. And he had the ability to just captivate. And I know you have, and I have, but just, you know, the ability to just hear him in a group, in a session, just tell stories, one story after another, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff and stories about when he got into a fist fight at Indianapolis Motor Speedway with A.J. Foyt and just things like that. I remember a few years ago, I think you were there as well. I believe they gave him the Man of the Year, and all the legends came out and talked about Robin Miller. He's certainly going to be missed and certainly tragic to anybody that loses their life to cancer. But I wanted to take some time to honor Robin Miller today. Tony Donahue, the Tony D Podcast. We go get on to something a little bit more positive, and that's the NFL. Let's start right here in our backyard. Colts had another preseason win on the road against Detroit. Again, it's just preseason. We'll see what it is. But it seems like Jacob Eason appears to be our guy, at least for the moment.
I mean, he's our guy until Carson Wentz is ready to go, which Carson Wentz was firing all cylinders on Wednesday when they had practice when he was taking on the first team reps. So, I mean, Wentz is the guy no matter what, unless he gets hurt again, which we hope doesn't happen. We'll see if Quentin Nelson will be available. They put him on the COVID list this week. We'll see who they keep as far as wide receivers, who's going to be, you know, where the depth chart is, because, you know, it's here, it's ready to go. And, you know, this time next week when we're talking, it'll be, you know, the day before the kickoff to the Colts' first game of the year, and we'll be having some fun.
What do we know about Quentin Nelson, Eric Fisher? You know, those are some key players that we're going to depend on to need to get back into the game. Quentin Nelson obviously being the biggest, no pun intended, but the biggest part of that line that we're going to need up there with Carson Wentz.
No, and absolutely. I mean, you have to have that offensive line for Wentz. Wentz is a guy that can scramble, but you don't want him scrambling as much as, you know, guys like Andrew Luck or Jacoby Brissett might have, because, you know, we've already seen him get injured. You don't need to see him scrambling. You need him comfortable in the pocket, firing those passes, having, you know, 2 to 3 seconds to get some passes off. So I don't know if we know what's going to happen. You know, COVID is always a tricky thing, but hopefully everybody's back and, you know, the whole roster is 100% for that week one game against the Seattle Seahawks, because we've talked about it so many times. The Colts don't get off to good starts. I mean, it's been what, 0-2, and I mean, it's been 0-1 for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's important. It's a very, very tough stretch. I think it's the toughest stretch of the schedule for the Colts starting the season, the first four games.
Absolutely. You mentioned Andrew Luck just on the off cuff. I might as well pump the flames a little bit here, but he was saw throwing with a high school football team out in Colorado this week, and maybe you ask yourself or scratch your head, or maybe we have wishful thinking. Is Luck, starting to get the itch to play football again? You know, hypothetically speaking, he'd be entering in his age, I believe, would be 33. Can't see him coming back to the Colts. But they do still hold his playing rights. So whether he would suit up again for Indianapolis or get traded for a massive amount of draft picks, that's something to think about. I honestly thought he would be back a lot sooner than now. So now I'm kind of the opinion that he's not coming back. And we're just kind of like we were back in the days of Peyton Manning. Peyton's going to come back. Peyton never came back. And I think that's my line of thinking right now. But is there anything to read into this? He's throwing with a high school football team out in Colorado.
The only thing I took away from that was I can't believe the guy wears those pants that they zip off at the knee to become shorts. We will never in our lifetime see Andrew Luck suit up in the NFL again. It's over. It's a pipe dream. It's not going to happen.
Absolutely. Well, let's go on down around the list, around the league here. Certainly ended in a tie. I've been talking a little bit with Ed, he's out in New York. He's going to spend the day in Manhattan with his wife. But tie, the Jets and the Eagles tie, and a lot of similarities between the Eagles and the Colts, especially in the coaching staff and our quarterback staff. So a lot of similarities in conversation with the Eagles and the Colts, and Ed will be back on with us again next week. But certainly ended in a tie out there in New York. What are your thoughts on the Eagles?
I mean, I haven't really paid too much attention to any of the preseason, to be honest with you. But if you're ending in a tie, isn't it there's unwritten rules of baseball. Isn't it an unwritten rule where if it's in the second half in a preseason game and you make it 31-30 or, you score to get within 1 point, you go for two or not, so there's no chance of overtime. I'm glad that they decided to go ahead and end in a tie. But I thought the international unwritten rule was, if you're late in the third or fourth quarter and you have a chance to tie it up, you simply just go for two and you work on your two-point play. We saw it last week with the Raiders and Rams, but I think that's an unwritten rule of the preseason. So somebody might have broke it last.
Well, they did have Joe Flacco, in for Jalen Hurts, who's resting up. He was sharp and steady. I watched a little bit of it. Is there going to be a return of Joe Flacco? That was actually a text. I highly don't think so. But for us fantasy football people, I mean, Jalen Hurts, you got to look at, and I know you were in our fantasy football draft this week. I looked at your draft, looked like you kind of did okay. What are your thoughts on your fantasy football team this year, at least with the balance anyway? You might be in other ones, but certainly Jalen Hurts is a guy you got to have in there for your fantasy football team. Joe Flacco's not coming back either. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody likes their team on the surface before week one because everybody's confident, in themselves. But, I've done the best drafting job possible. And really nobody knows. I mean, nobody has any clue. If we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I'm happy to have Josh Allen as my quarterback. I picked up Sonny Michel. I think he's going to get a lot of carries in the backfield for the Rams. I got some good weapons in Schuster, Hopkins, and Odell. And we'll see. It's all about just scouring that waiver wire to be able to pick up those guys that come on strong and make some noise early.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fantasy football, like with the NFL, you might do well in the draft, and that is going to help build your team. But the waiver wire, certainly pay attention for that as well. Another thing, we're talking about the Eagles. Other news, the Jaguars have traded Gardner Minshew for the Philadelphia Eagles for a conditional 2022, a sixth-round pick, and that was announced on yesterday, last Saturday, I believe, or today. I just recently saw it. So, but what does that trade we talk about? And I know Ed's not here with us, but what does that trade look like? Are they going to just push Joe Flacco on down, back to QB3? Are they even going to keep him around? There's a sign there if they're bringing in Gardner Minshew to be a QB2 would be my thought.
And we saw them last year go with some two quarterback sets and bringing guys out that wasn't Jalen Hurts. And, you know, you want to have a mobile backup. And you could always use Gardner Minshew as trade bait again as well to maybe grab something that you certainly need. You know, usually around this time it's when kickers are getting cut or guys are being traded late because a team has looked on their roster and said, you know, we've got this guy, but we're not sure that he's good enough or we're not sure that he's the guy, so let's bring another guy in here to maybe challenge him for that position and get some friendly competition or get some competition for these parts, these you know, whether it's your linebacker core or your safety, and just really see, hey, how does this guy do with the pressure on? So that's what that move seems like to me.
Well, let's kind of go around the NFL. We don't have a lot to go on because we haven't had a real game that counts yet. That's coming soon. But let's go around the NFL real quickly, and let's just talk about divisions. We'll start right here in the AFC South. The Colts are right smack dab in the thick of it. We need to have a good season. We certainly have a lot going and hoping that Carson Wentz can come back. And is it going to be our savior from Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning? Probably not. But will he get us to the playoffs? Absolutely, and that's where we got to focus on right now is having a good season that gets us into the playoffs, and then we can focus on the other things more than that. But the AFC South, not just necessarily the Colts, the AFC South overall, what are we looking at them as far as the strength they are, their schedule, and so forth?
Well, there's no guarantee in the NFL, as we know. And when I look at the Colts, I see a good team. But they're just as good as maybe Buffalo, but they're not as good as Baltimore or Kansas City. You know, so, and even the Chargers, who I think are going to make some moves. So I've got the Colts right on the cusp of making the playoffs, to be honest with you. And it's not that they're, you know, not a great or bad team. Look at the schedule. You start off with the Seahawks and the Rams, the Titans, the Dolphins, and the Ravens. These are all teams that probably this year are going to be fighting for the playoffs. We don't know how good the Rams are going to be with Matt Stafford, but we know that defense is really good. If we're talking October 12th after that Monday night game, and you told me the Colts are 0-5, I'm going to believe it, man. This is a tough schedule. Going down to Miami, Tua Tagovailoa is a guy that can play. The Colts have always struggled with scrambling fast quarterbacks. The Colts have to get off to a fast start. I mean, the season kind of lightens up a little bit when you get, you know, the Texans, 49ers, Jets and Titans and Jaguars. But again, Bills, Bucks in November. I mean, there is no guarantee that this Colts team makes the playoffs. I mean, this is a very tough schedule, and they have just as much opportunity to be a really good team as they do to be a underachieving team. So there's no guarantee that this team wins enough to get to the playoffs, if I'm being totally honest about it.
That's the scary part about it. It is what it is, and we're certainly going to be monitoring that situation. And one of the divisions that I think is going to create chaos in the NFL, and for once, I'm so glad that we're not really talking about it being the Patriots, but even though it is still in the AFC South, I look for the Buffalo Bills to be the real deal this year. And we might even be seeing them really close to, if not getting to the Super Bowl. It's a little bit early to make that prognosis, but the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen, man, that they are a team to contend with and certainly are going to be a team to contend with in the AFC East.
Yeah, I mean, they were right there. I mean, their defense is good. Josh Allen has proven that he can throw the football. He can make the plays downfield. They've got a great running back core. I mean, Bills are a team that are also right there, kind of with the Colts. Like, are you going to take that next step forward and start competing for, you know, the AFC Championship with the likes of the Ravens or the likes of the Chiefs? You know, Miami's going to make a big step this year, I think. The Raiders could be really good this year. So it's the AFC's, you know, it's a five-team race, I think. But at the end of the day, you got to go to Kansas City to get there.
Yeah, speaking of Kansas City, you know, we look at the AFC West and the Broncos. Some big news out of the Broncos this week. They tag Teddy Bridgewater over Drew Luck as their QB1. And, you know, preseason standings, granted, but you know, they've got them in preseason standings above the Chiefs, but it is what it is, because right now they just kind of throw it together. So I don't put a lot of stock in preseason standing, but Patrick Mahomes is certainly a weapon to deal with. And as you just mentioned, to the AFC Championship does go through Kansas City, but the Broncos are going to travel that road too. And it looks like that Teddy Bridgewater is going to be that guy. I'm scratching my head. I'm wondering, what do we see over Drew Locke there? You would think that it would be the other way around, but apparently the powers that be there in Denver see otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is a good quarterback, and this is a league right now, man, where you've got to have that scrambling quarterback. You've got to have a guy that can create down the field while scrambling out of the pocket. I mean, outside of Tom Brady, who's just the absolute GOAT, I mean, you have to be a mobile quarterback to be able to compete in this league, and obviously Teddy is a little bit more mobile than what we see in Drew Locke. Obviously, they haven't seen enough of Drew Locke making the plays to say, hey, this is our guy. And really, you need a game manager against a team like the Chiefs, because your defense is going to have to be the team that, you know, the side of the football that wins that football game, because you've got to give your offense has to go on long drives to give your defense a good rest, because they're going to be out there on their heels at all times when they're running around chasing after Patrick Mahomes. So, you got to become a game manager. And I think they probably look at Teddy Bridgewater as more of a game manager to be able to go on these long drives, to be able to go on, these scoring drives that keeps their defense on the bench, chilling out, getting a lot of rest between those reps when we know that Patrick Mahomes and even – you know, even Justin Herbert with the Chargers and Derek Carr with the Raiders are going to be getting up and down the field and trying to move that football on the ground.
As we keep going on through here, we look at the AFC North. We look at the Ravens. The Ravens have Lamar Jackson, and that's a spot that I'm going to look at. Does he keep that job throughout the season, especially if you're watching him through fantasy football? I don't have a lot of confidence in Lamar Jackson keeping his job through the season there. And certainly AFC North is going to be another tough division. Certainly can never out rule the Steelers, but the Browns are starting to come into their own with Baker Mayfield. But I think all eyes are on the Ravens in the AFC North and Lamar Jackson in that position there. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't know why Lamar Jackson would lose his job. The dude threw 26 downs and 9 interceptions last year, 36-6. I think the only concern would be if he stays healthy. I mean, whenever you have a mobile quarterback like that sometimes uses his legs first, you know, he might not be a guy that stays healthy. But, this dude had a record-breaking season 2 years ago and has weapons like Marquise Brown, like Trace McSorley, Sammy Watkins, J.K. Dobbins. I mean, he's got weapons to be able to put up huge numbers again this year for Lamar Jackson.
Well, let's move on over to the NFC, and let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Certainly, you look at Zeke Elliott being a very powerful force there. I've got him on one of my other fantasy leagues, what I call the big boy league, where it's like $100 buy-in. But I got Zeke Elliott on there, and, you know, Dak Prescott certainly at the helm there. So if you're able to handcuff those two. But the Cowboys, always the team to look at. And the team that likes to try to be out in front in the NFC East. I don't know that they're Super Bowl caliber this year, but if Prescott and Elliott can remain healthy, that is a force to reckon with.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at the NFC East, I mean, it's up for grabs. We never know what the Dallas Cowboys are going to be. Dak Prescott's always hurt, and he's never really seemed to live up to the hype. The Giants, Daniel Jones, is he striding in the direction? Washington football team, I mean, we'll see. And you throw the Eagles in there. So that's probably one of the divisions in the NFC that more than any is just really up for grabs.
Let's look at the West. I think a lot of people have got their eyes on the Cardinals. Cardinals are a very, very tough team. So are the Rams. So are the 49ers. So are the Seahawks. The toughest team in the NFC right now sits in that –
cul-de-sac of the NFC West. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the toughest team in the NFC West is the Seahawks. You've got, you know, all the rumors that went down over the offseason. Is Russell Wilson going to leave? He is the only, I mean, the Seahawks are the non-question. We know that they're going to be good. Okay. Can Matt Stafford take over the Rams and be good with them? You know, the Cardinals are great. They've got a lot of weapons, but can they close out games? We saw so many times last year where they struggled to close out games. And then the 49ers, we'll see if they can make that next step in the right direction. And it seems like they're probably going to be in that 6-11 bracket or 7-9, 7-10 type bracket. So we'll see. But when it comes to the NFC West, until proven otherwise, it's going to be tough to win consistently in Seattle when you're the opponent. Give me the Seahawks.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's go ahead and go on over to the NFC North. A lot of people are going to be looking at the Bears. Certainly around here in our neck of the woods, a lot of Bears fans. We know that Nick Foles wants to leave Chicago. Does he come to Indianapolis? That's a grab. That's a reach. Interesting that with scenario, if that did play out right now, I don't see that happening. We do see Justin Fields emerging from obviously Ohio State being the QB1. They drafted him for that purpose, for that job. I'm not sure if they'll play around with Andy Dalton, but certainly I think Nick Foles is on his way out, and Justin Fields is going to be clear the QB1, I would think, for going in any foreseeable future for the Bears.
Yeah, I think week one, week two, week three, we see Andy Dalton as your starting quarterback. They seem to kind of put him in the top number one reps, and that's just to say, hey, maybe we got somebody that we can trade away. You know, midseason, maybe he plays well the first 3 or 4 weeks, but we decide it's time to bring in Justin Fields and make things happen and go from there. And you know, hey, then maybe we trade Andy Dalton to Minnesota, or we trade Andy Dalton somewhere that, you know, maybe needs a quarterback, whether it's, you know, Dallas if they're still got injuries. Maybe it's a team like Denver if Teddy Bridgewater doesn't get off to the right start that they want. So I think the Bears should go with Justin Fields as early as they can, but I don't think that they're going to start him. Green Bay is going to be tough. Minnesota is meh. The Lions are meh. Give me the Packers to win that.
You know, I like the Packers. I do. And now that Aaron Rodgers' drama, soap opera is over with, you know, they went from showing love to not showing love to Jordan. Jordan's kind of now that redheaded stepchild, if you will. If you're Jordan Love, I think what you do is you just focus on doing the best you can do and being the best QB2 that you can be, because Aaron Rodgers, if you remember, did that exact same thing for a guy by the name of Brett Favre. And so the Packers have a way of molding and developing their QB2. So if I'm Jordan Love, I say, okay, let's go play football. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you're sitting there, and, yeah, you want to play, right? But you're also learning from one of the best quarterbacks of all time, especially one of the best quarterbacks of the last 20 years. So you sit there, you learn, you take in the invaluable information that you might not ever be able to get again, and you take that and you put it towards, you know, that day that you do get to start, whether it's, you know, with the Green Bay Packers or he's traded away somewhere. But you take that knowledge that you're learning right now, and it becomes inevitable. You're never going to be able to get that knowledge again. So you take it, you learn, and hopefully by year three or year four, you're ready to be the starting quarterback.
So we wrap things up before we have to wrap it up, put a bow on in NFC South. Obviously, the big storyline there is the Buccaneers, Tom Brady. You know, again, we are again with the Buccaneers talking about Tom Brady. So a lot to talk about there. Again, right, until you show me something different, Tom Brady shows up, he's gonna make it happen. So for right now, I'm rolling with the Bucks in the NFC South. Any final words there before we have to part ways, sir, on the NFC South?
No, I mean I think you're right. Until I'm proven that, you know, the Panthers or the Falcons or the Saints can consistently win games and beat Tom Brady, I mean, that's going to be their division to roll through. So I don't expect any changes there, because I don't have as much as I have faith in the Buccaneers. I equally don't have as much faith in any other team in the NFC South.
Well, with that, we'll have to wrap it up and put a bow on. Tony Donahue for the Tony D Podcast. What are you guys working out on this week, and where can people find your work and masterpieces, sir?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't really do much NFL. I do mostly IndyCar and racing, and we've got a lot of silly season rumors to get into, and we'll continue to look into that. We got baseball coming down to the wire here with, you know, division races starting to really catch up as we hit the end of August. So looking forward to seeing if my Chicago White Sox can hang on and making some predictions for the playoffs.
Absolutely. Real quickly, White Sox, what did you think about their appearance in the Field of Dreams game?
Like, we, you know, it was fun. It'll be cool to see Red Cubs next year. Okay. It was different. And, you know, hopefully that continues, because that was super fun to watch.
And what a great win it was, and when you can win with a walk-off home run like that. Tony, we appreciate it. You have yourself a good weekend. It's going to be hot here in Indianapolis. Try to stay cool, sir.
All right, man, you too. Take care.
All right. Tony Donahue stepping in and helping us out as Ed Kratz is out in New York City with his wife and the Eagles, and certainly the Eagles end with a tie. And so he jumped in and joined us. Also, Adam Jividen, our college football co-pilot, Super Browns fan, Super Buckeyes fan, talked about, well, week zero as we go into week one. And then we played a very special tribute to Robin Miller as we lost him this week in our racing segment with Speedway Steve Wilson from Speedway Digest. I tell you again, I just my heart goes out to Robin and his family, but most importantly, he was one of the best in the business. We end the show today with that tribute that we played earlier with Robin Miller. My name's Tom Marcos, El Presidente. Make sure you follow us on social media, Twitter, and on The Balance. Don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. I'm out of here. Deuces.
You know what really makes me angry? When I start to do a stand-up or speed and they start playing loud music and I got to talk even louder than I am now.
It isn't fair to lump me in with Hinton, because he's a college-educated man with a family, and I am a flunk out of Ball State who can't hold a job, who does hate a lot of things.
Dale Jr. would have done that. I'm all for him. I've never met the guy, but I like Dale Jr. I really do.
Yeah, right.
Dale Jr.
is, to me, and is just number one. He tries not to hit anybody, and y'all start in on him every time, and I am sick of it.
He tried so hard to miss Carl yesterday.
Yeah, that car was so far sideways when he hit him. Come on, lady.
We got
the Jack Daniels down and call back later.
I think I entirely deserve that for saying that Kurt Busch stapled his ears back together early in the season, and now it's 1-1, and we have to have a tiebreaker. And the owners of Champ Car finally get it through their heads. We've got to have the same people in the cars every year so people might start paying attention to us. It's called professional auto racing. And guess what? As long as they keep treating this like a Monopoly game, nobody's going to respect them.
She's 34 years old, allegedly. I haven't seen her birth certificate. I think she's older. She is, by definition of all the people that race with her in Grand Am Racing, talented, very talentedly. She's challenged to be talented at any level, at any speed.
You know Gossage pretty well. And I mean, his ego's as big as Texas. We know that. And this would be a chance for him to come in and save the Indy Racing League, find him a title sponsor. They could probably build a statue next to Ray Haroon out in front of the Speedway, and he'd be pretty happy. But
just stop with it.
But this just goes to show you how screwed up Champ Car Racing is and how unserious these guys are about beating Newman Haas. You don't come up with a team driver for Paul Tracy until a week before the season. You don't test him or anything in a brand-new car. How are you going to beat Newman Haas? You're not. This is the only sport in the world where you start your career at the Indianapolis 500. If you're a baseball player, you go through the AAA, or single A, or double. You start as single A and you go all the way to triple A. If you're good enough, you make it to the majors. No, not in racing. You get a sponsor, you get a car, and you go take your rookie test, and you run the Indy 500. Oh, my, this is fun.
I've been on Mark Miles' butt, not nearly enough. I'm going to start getting meaner here, because he doesn't listen to anybody who knows anything about racing.
That big yacht back there belongs to Tony George, and he said, if I can swim to it, he's going to feed me.